Well, coming up tonight on WCHL at 8 p.m., we've got our Halloween Spooktacular celebrating Undead Radio, collection of spooky stories, most of them local, to end your Halloween on the right note. Really looking forward to airing this tonight at 8 p.m. and hope you join us for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. One of those local ghost stories is a true local ghost story that was originally written by Tom Mexwell, who you may know as the frontman from Squirrel Nut Zippers. He moved into a house in 2014 in Hillsboro, moved out very quickly 9 months later, and in the journal Bitter Southerner, which you can get at bittersoutherner.com, he posted the story of his experience as well as the history of the house he moved into. It is a fascinating read, and you're going to hear it tonight during our Halloween Spooktacular. But we've got Tom Mexwell on the phone right now to help kick us off this hour. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the story that was posted in Bitter Southerner that you wrote is called We Salted Nanny, and I've read it now a couple of times. I'm looking forward to hearing the live version. It is a fascinating story. Tell us about it. You moved in 2014. What happened?
My girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, found ourselves homeless because we had rented a house in Chapel Hill that had mold and it was making us ill. So we broke our lease there, and the rental company kind of came after us and tried to put the fear into us by saying we owed for the remainder of the lease, which is important later on.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of ours in Hillsboro put us up, and we were looking for a place to live and found this big old house that was pretty cheap. And we went and looked at it and was like, well, okay, it's right on the Eno River. You know, it was like this kind of pretty yellow, and it was really big and affordable. And we were like, okay, let's do that. And we moved in. And gosh, in a month, the weirdness started.
Mm.
We found out that it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was extravagantly haunted. And there were things on the inside, and there were things on the outside, weird shadow things. I remember in early November, I was out in the back of the house by the shed getting firewood, because I'm the kind of guy who, when it's like 60 degrees, I crank up the fireplace.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm super excited.
Yep.
I'm out there with a load of wood in my arms, and I'm looking up at the night sky just going like, gosh, you know, the stars are so pretty. And I look over to my right, and I see a shadow, like a column of shadow. It's tapered on either end. It's about 5 feet tall. It's a foot off the ground, and it's floating down away from me. It's floating away from me down the circular driveway that went around the house. And I looked at it for probably 3 seconds, you know, a very, very long time. Long enough for me to establish that it wasn't my eyes playing tricks on me. There it was. And I couldn't do anything about it.
Your arms are full of firewood at this point, right?
I couldn't do a thing. And then I realized, once I'd gone back inside and said a lot of curse words, that the thing had to come around behind me in order to get where it was, you know, to be on that trajectory it had. And so that was that house, really. The things that would happen would be really in your face. And so you couldn't, a lot of times, it's like, oh, did I hear something, or did my eyes play tricks on me? And what's the real reason why this happened? A lot of the stuff in that house happened in such a way that it was kind of an assault on your reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's many, many stories, because my future wife was there and my daughter was there. They had their own experiences. Sometimes we have experiences all together.
What was the first thing that happened? What was the first thing that happened after you move in where you said, okay, that's a little weird?
For me, the first thing that happened was I was alone in the house, and you would come up the driveway and you would park and you'd go through sort of a side door that we called the mudroom door, and it had this very specific sound. It had this squeak and it scraped against the floor, and it was just super specific. And our driveway was a gravel driveway. So I was upstairs and everyone was gone, and I heard our car come home. I heard it come up the driveway and park, and then I heard the mudroom door open. I mean, this is the most unmistakable series of sounds. So I'm like, oh boy, you know, Brooke's home. And I come downstairs and I hear men shouting, like in a way that maybe something really bad is happening. They're outside. And I kind of look around and I don't see anyone. And I'm like, that's strange. Is somebody having a party, or is there some, is this, are these people having fun, or is something bad going on? Should I know about this? I couldn't see anybody. And I went out and no car, no Brooke, nobody. The back door's locked. And I really couldn't figure it out. I just couldn't understand what had happened. And so I was out kind of looking around when she comes home. This happened to Brooke. It happened to her mother when she came to visit. Things, you would hear the sound of someone returning home and coming into the house, and you would go downstairs and it would not have happened. But then 10 minutes later, it would
happen. It did. Oh, weird.
It did. It's very strange. And for Brooke, I think maybe the very first thing was the day after Halloween, she goes outside with our new dog for him to have a pee and hear someone calling her name. And it has a strange sort of tone. You guys do that on your recreation of the piece,
right,
which is really interesting to me. And she at first thought it was a neighbor, but it wasn't a neighbor. It wasn't a person that could be seen. Plus, there was a tonality to the voice that she told me was like, sort of like in octaves, like not quite male, not quite female. I never heard my name being called, but the girls heard their names being called a lot, and with other voices, like they would hear me calling their name from downstairs, but I wouldn't be downstairs. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Unpleasant things.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking with Tom Maxwell, the story is We Salted Nanny, and we got to talk about the name Nanny as well, because you named the house Nanny, and that brings up a whole new layer of this story, because this also is the most historic house I've ever heard of in my life. Because just every element of Hillsborough's history is just wrapped up in this house as well.
It's crazy. The one thing that I knew when we were living there was that the house had belonged to Julian Carr, who's the guy they named Carrborough after, who was just a nasty old racist, among other things. You know, he was a Confederate veteran, but he was only a private when the South capitulated. But later, after he became wealthy, he was known as the general, and he donated a lot to veterans' causes and would wear his uniform. You know, he looked like a kind of a nasty Colonel Sanders. He's the guy that dedicated Silent Sam on the campus of the University of North Carolina, and his speech is available for people who want to read it. But it's not nice. He talks about the purity of the Anglo-Saxon race and horse whipping an African-American woman. And he's very proud of what he did. So I knew about him. His wife was named Nanny, so we named the house after her. I don't know. She may have been a very nice person. but that's all I knew, you know. And after we ran away and I was writing the piece, I was like, I have to make sense of what happened to us. And because of the experience we had didn't make any sense, I thought, well, what is the house about? And then I found out about James Hogg, the person that built the house, who came over from Scotland, who was part of what they call the Transylvania Company. If you go around Hillsborough, you'll see historical markers for the Transylvania Company. I had no idea what that was all about. But basically, the idea was they're going to grab a bunch of land to the west and then use it to form the 14th colony. They actually went up to the Continental Congress and said, hey, we want to do the 14th colony.
Right.
And they were turned down. So him and his history, and a lot of other history of the house too, but Hogg built it in 1794, something 1793, something like that. And it's still with us to this day.
Were you ever able to connect the experiences that you had, the ghosts in the house, to any particular historical moment in the house's history? Was there like a one-to-one connection between, oh, this person is this spirit?
No.
Okay.
And the thing is that as one will, I've received criticism on the piece, and there are people who say basically this is a bad ghost story, and I'm like, you're absolutely right. This is a terrible. The reason that We Salted Nanny doesn't work as fiction is because it's not fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read ghost stories, usually they're very satisfying, like this is the ghost of the old woman who died in the house, or this is the ghost of the person who was murdered in the house,
right,
and they're looking
right.
for revenge, and it all, like, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly.
This house was just bonkers. Crazy things happened, and there's no explanation for it. The other thing that I didn't mention is that the house is literally built on an Indian graveyard, which, as we know from watching movies, is a really bad idea. And this explorer, I didn't know about any of this. This guy, this English explorer, John Lawson, comes over and he writes about his experiences. This is in 1791. Mm-hmm. He visits what will become Hillsborough, which at the time was a village. An Okanichi tribe had a village there, and they were very nice to him. I think those guys were starving, and so the Indians take him in and they give him, like, barbecued bear meat and stuff, and they kind of save their butts a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes about that. He writes about that place. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, like archaeological laboratory or something like that, mm-hmm. came out and excavated. They found the remains of that village in 1980, I think, in 1986, they mm-hmm. came out and they found, like, you know, people's graves, a lot of children or young men who died violently and were buried with little trinkets, you know. Well, in 1980, they took one of the bodies back to the university, which, again, I just don't think it's a good idea.
Every horror movie, you're not supposed to do that.
It's a horror movie. And in 1986, they came back, and the person who was our neighbor was living there. And he said, don't take anything out of the ground. Now, as near as I can tell, and I don't know, but they were either right under, because the house where it is now was moved in 1980. It wasn't built on that site.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was plunked down into what could be a sacred place.
Right.
You know, and some of the things that we saw outside the house, in my mind, and boy, I can't, you know, I'm no expert. I don't ask anyone to take me at my word or believe me. I'm just telling people what my experiences were. I don't know that those were, like, human things, like
right.
the ghost of old so-and-so. I think they were not human things.
Yeah. What was the thing that finally compelled you and Brooke to say, okay, that's it, we're out?
I don't know that it was one thing. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and more and more and more things. And the thing about it is you have no idea how much you want your life to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And when stuff like that is happening, I remember one night we were sitting in our bed and I was talking trash because these things made me mad. They mm-hmm. made me mad because they were scaring people that I loved. They were scaring me. They were an assault on my sense of sort of what is real and how things should work. And so I would basically just yell at them, you know, just completely powerless, yell at them. And I was talking trash, and we were upstairs in the bedroom, and they had these big, heavy doors with the sort of cast iron door handle thingies, you know, that latch with a loud click. You've probably seen them mm-hmm. in old houses. And that door was closed and latched. And as I was, I guess, taunting, that door flew open and slammed against the back wall. I mean, it opened with force.
Wow.
And at the same time that I can't say that I was afraid, there was a part of me that was like, you know, you're powerless.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that you can, you either accept this. And so every time something like that would happen, I'd put it in a box and I put it away and not have, oh, I'm going to go write a blog post about, you know, I don't want this to be a linear narrative. I just want it to go away.
Right.
And at some point we just couldn't take it anymore. The reason we stayed as long as we could is we thought, oh boy, if we break the lease, we know what's going to happen, you know, or what could happen is that these people could come after us and go like, well, you have to pay rent on the place anyway, or whatever, you know.
Because that had already happened once before, right?
Because that had already happened, right? And then I can tell you, you're like, oh, they left after a short period of time. Let me tell you something. We should have left after 2 months. we should have left as soon as the not acceptable thing started happening, which was almost immediately.
Because you were there for 9 months. That's a long time.
That's such a long time. And it was a cold winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you could not heat that house.
Mm-hmm.
One, because it was big and old. And two, I don't know. You just could not heat that house.
So when you left, the story is entitled We Salted Nanny, and that's a reference to what you did when you left, right?
Yeah. It was a binding ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke was like, I know what to do, because the thing that was frightening was that some of these things might come with us, you know, because
mm-hmm.
you don't know what the rules are. There are no rules. So it's like, oh, Lord, I don't want these things on our back, you know. going to wherever it is we're going to go. We want to leave them here
right.
and seal it up. And so the thing, we all got a box of salt, you know, and we stood in a line and we threw it over our shoulders. And I talk about it in the piece, and we go around and we salted the outside of the house. So all along the foundation, all along every door and window frame, we ran a really thick line of salt, and those things stayed in there. Now, I'll tell you this story. I got a call a year ago from a local reporter who wanted to do a piece on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't know that I want to participate. She said, well, look, I already went there, and I went there with my cameraman, and we went around the back of the house and looked in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw, we were looking at what appeared to be a curtain until it turned around and faced us.
Whoa.
Yes.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, yeah, Nanny's still cranking, you know, and she's like, she sent me a picture of, like, they took a picture of the front door and it had a face in one of the panes. I'm like, girl, just don't go there. I mean, like, for real, though, it's like, this is not like a spooky, spooky, spooky story of spooky ghosties.
Right, right.
It's like, don't go inside the house. I'm really not kidding. I'll never, 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 never cross that threshold again as long as I live for no amount of money.
What is the status of the house now? Do people live there? Is it empty? Do you know?
You know, I don't know that I can tell you with authority.
Okay.
I hear things. I hear that they tried to sell it and they couldn't sell it. I heard that one family lived there after us but moved out after 6 months. The woman who owned the house when we lived there, who is the last member of the Freeland family, Donna Freeland, died shortly after we moved away, and I'm not suggesting there's a connection there. I think she was in ill health. And for the life, I don't think anybody's in there now. I don't know if it's for rent. In your piece, you're like, oh, it's for rent. And I'm like, don't.
Just don't even.
Don't. Yeah, don't. And that's, I mean, and I'm not trying to mess up the people. I think the people who own it, you know, I'm not trying to deny them a livelihood or anything. I'm just saying, I guess I'm saying I would never.
Yeah. Speaking with Tom Maxwell. And again, the piece is called We Salted Nanny. You can read it online, bittersoutherner.com. And again, tune in tonight during our Halloween Spooktacular from 8 to 10. You'll hear our rendition of this piece as well. We got to wrap up. I want to keep talking with you about this forever, but give us the update from the last 5 years. What has happened since?
Oh, we went on our picaresque adventure and ended up moving to New Orleans for a while and Los Angeles and had a great time. Now we're back in North Carolina for a minute because I'm helping the band the B-52s write their first memoir.
Awesome.
Which is as fun as you can imagine and exciting. And I'm really, really thrilled to help them tell their story. I think it's going to come out late next year. So I'm like kind of chained to my computer and writing that when I'm not going and getting amazing stories from the B-52s. Brooke is performing and she's gifted. So
awesome.
For Brooklyn Maxwell, somewhere near you.
And I interrupted you before you were about to say something earlier. What final thought about the story?
Oh, I was going to say, it's on, apparently the house is now on a Hillsborough haunted tour or something.
So all right.
It's very interesting and strange to me that I told the story because I just had to kind of get it out of my head. And then now it's like out living its life in a way that's sometimes very strange. But I appreciate the interest.
Well, I was fascinated reading it, and thank you so much for sharing it. And I look forward to hearing the on-air version coming up tonight. We've got to wrap up. Tom Maxwell, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me so much. Have a great night.